So, for the last part of this class, I want to talk about the history of Ireland. So it's a bit of a revision of the history of Ireland, if you like. Because I think that within the question, which is a theme on the CAPES programme, Mémoire et Territoire, Territory and Memory, Ireland is very likely to come up. There's a reason for this, because, of course, Ireland is a very exceptional sort of place. Usually, if you have a war of independence, you're a colony, and you have a war of independence, usually you either win or you lose. You win, you have an independent country, or you lose and you're still a colony. Ireland is rather exceptional because they have this kind of compromise, and let's divide it in two. So in 1920, at the very beginning of the 1920s, Ireland is divided into two, Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. The line was drawn by a civil servant in London who didn't know a lot about Ireland, but, you know, the way that colonists usually draw Ireland. And so you had this compromise. Now, this was supposed to, first of all, it was supposed to be temporary, but it's now been 100 years. And secondly, it was supposed to solve the problem of tension and conflict between Catholics and Protestants in Ireland. So I think we can say it was a failure, yeah, because we still have this kind of tension. It's 100 years later, so it didn't work quite as well. So before I go on to the actual division of Northern Ireland, just a couple of general revisions about the south of the Republic of Ireland today. How long is its coastline? What is its capital? Okay, yeah, you got that one, okay? How long has it been a republic? You don't know. Okay. Would you like to guess? No. Okay. What is the population? Go on, guess.
5 million.
5 million, thank you. And which bit is Northern Ireland? Okay. Do you want me to give you the answers? Yeah, I think that's a good idea, isn't it? Oh, what percentage of the Irish are Catholics in the Republic? 92. A lot or not a lot? Huge, huge amount, yeah. There you go. The coastline is 1,000 kilometres long. The capital is Dublin. It's been a republic since 1949. Population 4.5 million. Three quarters of it in the south. And I think these figures are 10 years old, but it will not have changed very much. 87% of the Irish are Catholics. Now, they may or may not be very religious Catholics, but they identify as Catholics. And also, in Ireland, even more than other places, you don't stop being a Catholic. This is also the case in England, yeah? Because, you know, that in France, you're automatically a Catholic, or you're not really religious, but you say, well, yeah, I suppose I'm a Catholic. I was baptized, yeah? But in England, we have atheist Catholics, and I can explain this. As you know, in France, it's not unusual to find somebody who says, oh, I'm Jewish, but I don't believe in God. I'm an atheist Jew. And this is not surprising, because when a group is under pressure, people don't say, oh, I'm not a Jew anymore. Oh, no, they're my people. I'm a Jew, but I just don't believe in God. And in England, you have this situation with Catholics. Catholics are 10% of the population, under pressure, some discrimination still today, and so it's not unusual, or it's not impossible, if you get somebody like me, I don't believe in God, but I don't say, I'm not a Catholic anymore, because my people are under attack. So I say, you know, I'm a Catholic, but I don't believe in God. But people in France don't understand this, really, very rare. History of Ireland, then. Short history of Ireland. Ireland, then, one of Britain's first colonies. And the big event that formed the divisions in Ireland is the Cromwellian settlement in the 17th century. So what happened? Well, first of all, Cromwell was a contradictory figure. Reminds me of Napoleon in some ways. Tremendously progressive in Britain. Destroyed the absolute monarchy. Even though the monarchy came back, with much, 10 times less power. So Cromwell was the person who established Parliament as the at the top through the Civil War. And he did it partly in the name of Protestantism. Protestantism at the time symbolised the desires of the new commercial classes and symbolised the new worldview. We're not interested in hierarchies which don't change. We're interested in individual entrepreneurship, an individual relationship with God, an individual interpretation of the Bible. So all of these things. And listen, we want a new modern society which leaves behind this very, very traditional hierarchy. However, Ireland suffered a lot from this. Ireland remained Catholic. And this was both a religious problem for Cromwell, but also a political problem. It was a religious problem because he was convinced that, you know, Protestantism was the true faith. Last year I was in Geneva, and there's this enormous monument to the Reform, and it says, Post tenebras lux, after the darkness came the light. Yeah, Catholicism, the darkness, Protestantism, the light, and it's a big deal. Cromwell certainly felt inspired by God to defend Protestantism, but also it's a political problem. England's big enemy was Spain. The Catholic monarchy, and Ireland being Catholic, they might help the Spanish come and attack England. Cromwell said, well, I'll sort this problem. Let's go over to Ireland and defeat any possibility of Irish rebellion. And while we're doing this, we will also take over the land and we will give it to Protestants. We'll take over the land and give it to Protestants, especially in the north. English and Scottish Protestants in the north were given all the best land. And so forever will be considered by a whole section of the Irish Catholic population as colonizers. And there's a problem. And this remains a problem today. This is in the north of Ireland. This is a mural in a Protestant part of town saying Oliver Cromwell was wonderful. Protector, Lord Protector, defender of the Protestant faith. Now, this mural is not there because this is a part of town where people really love history. It's there to say Catholics fuck off. Yeah. It's supposed to be insulting to Catholics. That's the reason it's there. And also notice it's not organised by the government. It's a local working class house which has been done by local people, and it's a sign that Protestant is better. So this is today. So tensions have not gone away, and anti-Catholic racism is still a very real thing in Northern Ireland. Situation much better than 40 years ago. Much better. In the 1970s, I already mentioned this, in the 1970s, if you were a Catholic and you had a problem and you phoned the police, it's because you were an extremely stupid Catholic, because there was zero chance that they would help you. This is not the case today. Things are better. But anti-Catholic racism is a real thing. Now, this sounds really bizarre. It's a racism. How can it be racism? You know, the Protestants are white. The Catholics are white. How can it be racism? Nevertheless, it can be done. Racism is very creative. If you wanted a job, more in the past, but even today, if you wanted a job, you said, oh yeah, I'd like a job, yes. And 100 years ago, they said, well, are you a Catholic? Say, yes, well, you can't have a job. They can't say that anymore. What school did you go to? I went to the School of the Virgin Mary. So it's very easy to know if somebody's a Catholic or not, and the racism is a very real thing. Even worse, this is just 8 years ago. Look at the slogan there. No takes in our area. Takes is an insult word for Catholics. So this is a very real thing. It's not. In fact, you can see in Belfast, you can see the graffiti KAT, kill all takes. So it's still pretty heavy. So it can still be pretty heavy. Here you have in Belfast. I don't know if you can see this. This is a wall. This is the Catholic part of town. This is the Protestant part of town, and this is the wall to separate them. And now, in a bizarre way of, I don't know if it's Irish humour or irony, they call this a peace wall. Mur de la paix. Yeah. Now, 20 years ago, 20 years ago, there were 80 walls like that, and today there are 60. So it's getting better, but very slowly. So the tensions are still very much there, and these go right back to the time when the Catholics were the local indigenous people, and the Protestants were the colonizers. Here you have. Will Northern Ireland's peace walls come down by 2023? No, they didn't. But about a quarter of them came down. This is another one. So going back to the story, August 9, 1649, Cromwell and 12,000 soldiers arrived. An absolute massacre. Over the next 10 years, a third of the Irish population were either killed or died of starvation. And Catholic boys and girls were shipped off to Barbados. They weren't exactly slaves from a legal point of view, but the difference was small. They were shipped off as unfree indentured servants, and the Catholic land was given to the Protestants. I will put the PowerPoint on the blog. Yeah, you don't need to get everything. So what did Cromwell think about Catholicism? This is Cromwell's opinion on Catholicism. Catholicism is more than a religion. It is a political power. Therefore, I am led to believe there will be no peace in Ireland until the Catholic Church is crushed. Now, the other thing about this is that this is from another mural in Northern Ireland today. So it's not just that Cromwell thought this, it's that there are people today who want to put it on the walls. So here we get the difference. Before Cromwell arrived, how much of the land is owned by Catholics? The dark green, 100% Catholics. The light green, 50% Catholics. And at the top, 25% Catholics, because even before Cromwell, there were already plantations by Scottish Protestants. That's before Cromwell. And this is after Cromwell. You can see, basically, they gave all the land away. So it's a really big deal. Now, this is not so exceptional. This is what happened in every country in Africa. We're surprised because it's in Ireland. So a colonial situation, which also, of course, had tremendous, like in every other colony, had tremendous effect on culture. The Irish language was suppressed. The Catholic religion was suppressed. For many, many years, the universities were reserved only for Protestants. And so basically, you built up a division which is not going to disappear today quickly, which will take time. And this is why, people who say today, oh, well, it doesn't matter if you're Catholic or Protestant. Let's forget that question. This is just people who haven't understood anything. It's like, if you go to South Africa and say, oh, don't think about black or white, it doesn't matter. It's just because you don't understand the situation at all. You get nowhere with it. And in Northern Ireland, it's similar. Not as bad, of course. 1703, then again, the amount of land owned by Catholics very much reduced. After Cromwell, the monarchy was restored in 1660, then at the end of the 17th century, William and Mary were the monarchs, and they introduced particular discriminations against Catholics. They introduced laws saying that no Catholic could buy land, no Catholic could vote, no Catholic could join the army, and no Catholic could go to university. Most of these laws will last until the 1820s. After an enormous campaign, Catholic emancipation will be voted by the Parliament in London in the 1820s. For all of this period, after Cromwell, Ireland is rapidly part of the United Kingdom. All of Ireland is part of the United Kingdom until 1922, when you have the invention of Northern Ireland. If we get to the 19th century, the enormous tragedy and founding myth of Ireland in the 19th century is the potato famine. Now, the potato is important because really poor people in Ireland in 1800, they basically lived on potatoes and milk. You can actually live for a long time on potatoes and milk. It's an excellent nutrition. It's a bit boring after the first month. And so for these reasons, you don't need much land, and it can grow on almost any kind of land. However, there is always a danger of having a population dependent on just one kind of food, and that is that in the middle of the 19th century, a disease came along, a potato disease. And the potato disease also came to America and to France at the time, but there was no population who was only eating potatoes. And so you got the Great Irish Famine, which in Gaelic is called An Gota Mór, and is the founding myth of the Irish nation, and they say it's something that the Irish have absolutely not forgotten and are not going to forget. That is that because of the colonial situation, they were dependent on potatoes, and because of the potatoes, there was a huge, famine, 1845 to 49. About 1 million people died, and 1 million million more left Ireland. Most of them went to New York. That was the place to go at the time, and they built the railways. That's the easy job. No CV necessary. Before the famine, Ireland's population was estimated to be 8 million. And afterwards, it was estimated to be 6 million. Notice that the population today is lower than it was before the famine, which for a European nation, I think, is the only example. There's something quite strange about Ireland, because it's big enough to have 25 million people, no problem. You know, but not there at the moment. So what caused the famine? Well, two things. First of all, they depended on potatoes, but also the other kinds of food were too expensive. And in particular, at the time, the English farmers, the big farmers, imposed the Corn Laws, which meant that you couldn't buy grain from France or Spain. So it's all pretty sad and horrible. During the famine, during the famine in the 1850s, Ireland continued to export food. A previous famine in the 18th century, the government had closed the exports, so that there was food. But during the Great Famine of the 1840s, this did not happen. Basically, the reason this is important is because not only was there this horrible famine, but the general opinion among the Irish people is that it was the fault of the English, that it was not a natural disaster. Now, what is important here is not so much the facts as the fact that is how people see it. So you can see that the Irish exports of animals, of farm animals, actually increased during the famine. It's all depressing, and it gives rise to one of the most popular Irish famine songs. If you have friends in Ireland and you want to see them cry. This is. I don't want to sound cynical. I'm really not cynical. I come from an Irish origin family. So what was this? Yeah, the fields of art and right.
My Michael, they have taken you away. For you stole Trevelyan's corn, so the young might see the morn. Now a prison ship lies waiting in the bay. I heard a young man calling. Nothing matters, Mary, when you're free. Against the famine and the crown, I rebel, they cut me down. Now you must raise our child. Our love was on the wing. We had dreams and songs to sing. It's so lonely round the fields of Athenry.
Okay, so as you can see in this song, her boyfriend, I think they didn't say boyfriend at the time, her fiancé, is on the prison ship. He's going to be taken to Australia, not on holiday, but to have a horrible time there. And the reason is that he stole some food. He stole some corn to feed the children. Okay, so it's a melodramatic song. Trevelyan's corn. Trevelyan was the governor of Ireland at the time. So yeah, I'm not going to give you the whole story, but things were pretty bad. At the beginning, the London government did help people, but a new prime minister was elected in 1846, and he was a sort of mercantilist. He believed that really the famine was God's punishment for the Irish, and so that they shouldn't help. There you go. Charles Trevelyan, who was in charge of the administration of government relief, limited the government's food aid program because of a firm belief of letting things work themselves out. He thought that the judgment of God sent the calamity to teach the Irish a lesson. Okay, so this is the 19th century for you. There was a lot of support internationally for the Irish famine, and in particular, money came from around the world, and famously there was a collection among a Native American tribe of the Choctaws in 1847, this is something that all Irish people know about, this money that came from the Native Americans to help join the famine. It's a big symbol of solidarity between peoples. Listen, thank you for listening so well. The story will continue.